Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of our other episodes at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 2, Episode 26 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and with me here in the Cinematica studio is...
Just me, Kaylee.
Just the Kaylee today.
It's Episode 26, does that mean Season 3 is next week?
Yeah.
Oh!
I know.
Can we have a party?
I know. And do you know what that means? Two seasons of 26 episodes means we've been going a year.
This is like
our first birthday. 52 episodes. Well, no, it's more than 52 because of all the extra shows that we've done, but 52 weeks.
Happy birthday to us. We should have some champagne. We're going to have, so hopefully there'll be some later at the Italian Film Festival.
There will be Prosecco, which is Italian bubbly.
I've never had that before.
When I used to drink, it was a preferred tipple of mine. Mm. I must admit, it was very good. And I'll tell you what, one thing you can guarantee at the Italian Film Festival in Wellington is that the catering will be sensational because Nicolini's is a sponsor. And so it's you get a bit of Prosecco in you, then you go and watch a film. The film's usually pretty good, and then you roll across the road to Nicolini's and eat yourself stupid. It's brilliant.
Yes. Oh, good thing I am dressing up tonight.
Indeed. Well, both looking forward to it. And I must admit that because I've been away, I haven't really been paying much attention to the Italian Film Festival. I haven't even looked at the program. So Tony Lambert, the organizer of the festival, I want to apologize in advance before I see you tonight because I haven't even done anything for the paper.
Is he related to Adam Lambert? Because that'd be great.
No. It would be great.
Yeah. Is he a bit of a showman, Tony?
Yeah, in a dry English sort of way. Yeah, but not in that sort of name.
Dang it.
Just before we get underway, I just want to tell you my favourite story of the week.
Mm.
See if I can tell this properly. Ben Affleck, who's doing promotions for Argo at the moment around the place, was telling this fantastic story about when he was about to shoot The Town, which is the film before Argo, and he was driving Blake Lively, the star of Gossip Girl, who was in his film, driving her around Boston. Because just to get her used to the locations and the vibe of the town, et cetera, et cetera. And he's driving down the street and he says, this is where Matt lived. And she said, Matt who? And he says, Matt Damon. And she goes, oh, wow, do you know Jason Bourne? And it's like, but let's just do the maths, you know. Like Good Will Hunting came out when she was 8. So, yes, chances are she doesn't know about that whole...
I saw Good Will Hunting, though. It's up there in one of my top favourite films. But my parents let me, like, watch pretty mature films.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I know. But still, but if you think about it, I'm just feeling terribly old here.
Who doesn't know Matt Damon?
Well, you know Matt Damon, but you just don't know that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are mates.
I knew that.
From the same hood.
Didn't know that.
Well, Blake Lively.
Blake Lively. Take a step back. Jeez.
Anyway, I thought that was a nice story. In today's episode, I suppose we should get onto the show, shouldn't we? This is what happens when Simon's not here.
We waffle on. We wax lyrical about dumb celebrities.
Today, we are going to catch up with the a cappella comedy Pitch Perfect. We had to skip it last week because of time constraints. Carl Urban's Chin is the star of the new comic book adaptation Dread. It is Urban, isn't it?
I don't know. Because when I first moved here, I was like, oh, it's Carl Urban. And they're like, no, Urban.
It is Urban because he's Karl Heinz. Karl Heinz Urban.
Heinz Urban.
Yeah, because his family are German and a former Wellingtonian, Wellington College kid.
Mm.
He's in Dread, so we'll be talking about that. And we will also go searching for Sugar Man a little bit later on. But first, we'll tell some more dumb stories. No, we won't. What's in the mailbag?
Rudy Six sent us a tweet. Great episode last week. I'm so glad the whole wolf pack is back together. Yeah. Dan, don't leave again.
Except that we're not now.
Yeah, no.
Sorry.
Janky Beth, Pitch Perfect, 2-word review, off key.
Ooh. Oh, you've stolen mine.
Miriam Ruth Ross. Miriam has been starting some great discussions on our Twitter feed. So this one kicked off this week. Dread 3D, spine-tingling gruesomeness. 3D effects were best I've seen in a while. And I apologize if I pronounce this wrong, but CM Ranapia?
Ranapia.
Yes. I hate 3D on principle, but its use in Dread 3D was really interesting.
Yes, Craig, an extremely opinionated tweeter, I should point out. So if you follow him, CM Ranapia, he's also a blogger for on the Public Address site. And yes, an extremely opinionated gentleman. So thanks for listening.
Yes, and one that I thought was really funny today that I retweeted from Sarah Polly, Canadian director. Where is it? Come to me.
Sarah Polly, whose film Stories We Tell is going to be coming out next year. We have our fingers crossed that it will.
Yes. Oh, and I have some other exciting news for you today.
Oh,
I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but...
Oh, you can't do that.
a particular P.T. Anderson film might actually finally be coming to New Zealand.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Because, we weren't allowed to say last week that we had heard rumours that it might not be. Because that would just cause...
But these are just rumors, so I don't actually know.
They are just rumors. We don't have any inside information at all.
Yes. Sarah E. Polly, which is Sarah Polly's Twitter handle, finally just figured out that mixed reviews is a euphemism for bad reviews. Oh, Sarah.
Oh.
What? Oh,
that's not fair. Cheer up.
It's okay.
So what have New Zealanders been going to? Is there a top five? Did people actually go to the movies last weekend? Because I know that people have been, cinema owners have been a bit gloomy about things recently.
Yeah, actually things have really picked up. It's been so busy at the cinemas. Like last night was so busy.
Wow.
I mean, it's Cheap Tuesday, but still, like, I had to wait in a long line and I was going to the 9 o'clock screening.
9 o'clock, wow. And it was Dread, wasn't it?
Yes. Yep. There's lots of, but there weren't that many people in Dread, so I don't know what they're going to see.
Okay.
Obviously not Dread. Anyway. Speaking of Dread, Dread premieres at number 5 this week. Also premiering just above that, Pitch Perfect in at 4.
Yeah, and Pitch Perfect had Sneaks, didn't it, the weekend before? So it had
not very well promoted Sneaks, though.
No, but they lasted all weekend. They were going, so it was kind of weird. Maybe that's always a sign, I reckon, that when distributors are feeling like not confident or they're feeling like the product's a bit thin, is that they just go, oh, well, we'll just send this one out a bit early.
Mm.
Untouchables or Intouchables. Or the Intouchables, or whatever it's called, has 2 weekends of Sneaks.
It does.
Yeah,
which starting is like, this weekend, so go see it.
Yeah, yeah, and which means that we
wink.
But yeah, so it's kind of weird. The whole sneak preview thing. It's like, well, we'll just stick it out there. We won't tell anybody, but then we will. You know.
Or maybe it's to prevent people from downloading it. I don't know.
As if.
Down from 1 in number 3 this week is Looper. In 2, up from 3 is Hotel Transylvania, and probably thanks to the New Zealand school holidays, up from 2 to number 1 is Madagascar 3.
I think it's because of the Cinematica reviews.
I think so too. So I think
basically
we have a lot
you got 2 good reviews in 2 weeks. So.
Yes, I think there's a lot of youth listeners out there tuning in.
Yeah, and of course the Capital Times. So I think that's a good sign. But interesting, because I think we were discussing last week that we thought that Looper would actually go up.
Ooh.
Or at least go up in terms of its gross because of word of mouth, and it has in fact dropped to number 3. So not quite kicking on the way that we perhaps might have hoped.
I did try to read some like fan fiction, well not fan fiction, that's
ooh,
weird,
gross.
But some fan reviews or fan explanations of Looper, and I couldn't quite follow it and I got a bit bored, so I was like, no, I'll just forget it. Have you read any good Looper knowledge?
No, I've got a few things stacked up actually, but I'm wondering whether I need to see it again beforehand. I'm not sure. I'll tell you what, I do think I am going to go and see a second time, and that's The Sapphires, which I saw this weekend. It is really, really good. But one of the reasons why I want to see it again is I want to find a DCP version, because you know how I'm on this crusade, this pro DCP, anti 35mm film must die, it's had its day crusade. Well, Sapphires on 35mm looked great.
Mm.
And it looked kind of really appropriate for it. It kind of looked like a 1970s film. It felt like the right look for the right film, and so what I want to do is go and find a DCP version and see whether it maintains that sort of graininess that I saw on the film version. So I am sort of eating my words ever so slightly, because that particular film worked on 35mm, whereas I reckon these big effects blockbusters, it doesn't really make any difference these days. But you know, if you've got a contrary opinion, please share it with us via the social media, and we will engage with you.
Yes, I saw Sapphires digitally, and it was a big relief, because I'd been watching so much 35 that was like out of focus, and it's just like, oh, so I was like, oh, well, I can see.
Yeah, and yeah, well, that's right. So in focus, right into the bottom corner.
I felt a little bit like a day on Slevin, sitting there being like, oh, thank God this is digital, I can actually watch it. It's like, but it's not just film. It's also about the we have to remember, it's more about the equipment. You know, yes, there are bad prints, but there are really good prints that are put through bad projectors, and it's just like trying to find that balance, which is a bit digital in these tight times.
Indeed. Well, let's get into the main part of the show. This is, you could argue that this is actually last week's show extended, because we were intending to talk about this last week. See if I can remember it. Oh, hold on, gotta have this thing out. Right.
This is a list of all of the songs that we have ever performed.
There's nothing from this century on here.
It's not enough to be good, we need to be different.
Our goal is to get to the finals.
How are we paying for regionals?
A bikini car wash is definitely out of the question.
No, Aubrey, I'm like super good at bikini car washes.
There will be no more wasting time with school or boyfriends.
Can I trust you will add your own cardio?
Yeah, no, don't put me down for cardio.
What are you doing?
Horizontal running.
Was that car wash bit in the film?
No, I don't know if it was.
I don't think it was.
No. No,
misleading trailers.
Oh, well, aren't they all these days?
Maybe we should start next week. We should finally have our misleading trailers episode, because I have a list going.
Yeah, well, I read a comment online recently that apparently the second or third trailer for The Master, the P.T. Anderson film that we're not allowed to talk about, probably it's like a 5-minute trailer, and you know, fully 2/3 of it isn't in the finished film.
Dang it.
I don't know whether that's a kind of deliberate
confusion,
seeds of confusion. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we this is all because we don't want to talk about Pitch Perfect, isn't it, really?
Actually, I just found out something really interesting about Pitch Perfect doing my research. This is a feature, let's just jump into it. This is a feature directorial debut from Jason Moore, who directed the Broadway puppet hit Avenue Q.
Mm-hmm.
What? I haven't seen Avenue Q, but I listened to the soundtrack all through the summer of 2010. Mm-hmm. I was cutting lawns for the school district, and I just listened to Avenue Q. I'm a little ride on lawnmower cutting lawns.
I'm trying to picture that. Yes. Got it.
Okay. High vis safety vest. Anyway, but Avenue Q aside, Pitch Perfect is a comedy starring the lovely Anna Kendrick and the very funny Australian Rebel Wilson, about an all-girl a cappella group who wants to redeem themselves because they went to the nationals and their lead singer threw up everywhere. Basically, that's the
at Lincoln Center.
Yes. Yep. And so the seniors have graduated and moved on, and now the kind
and, of sorry I just want to interrupt, and evidently this is the international, I've got air quotes going here,
yes,
the international a cappella competition, which features no international acts whatsoever, would appear to be televised because they have commentators.
Yes.
For no apparent reason. Anyway.
I think it's just to get Elizabeth Banks in it, really.
Well, yes. Yeah, to get Elizabeth Banks and to explain what's going on and to make some of the, and to add a few jokes, because it was set a little bit thin on the jokes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
So anyway, a cappella girl group versus a cappella boy group within the university setting. Hijinks ensue. It starts out kind of as this funny chick flick, and then sort of devolves into this like preteen boy toilet humor gag fest at the end. It's kind of like,
it just throws everything into the mix, really. It's got no confidence in its own premise, really, and
no.
So it just I can sort of imagine that at some point the script was given to some Hollywood gag writer to sort of punch it up, we need more jokes, and it lost whatever heart and soul it might have had in the process.
And there really wasn't enough singing either, I felt.
No, or well, not more. Enough lip syncing or whatever it is that they were doing. Do they actually sing?
Yeah.
Is it actually live singing?
No, it's not live singing. That would be recorded in studio and mastered,
so
and then
so it's not like Les Mis, which we're all looking forward to.
Yes. No. This is no Les Mis.
No.
Which could be a good three-word review. it was entertaining, but honestly, it let me down. It wasn't as funny as I thought it was. The trailer. Once you see the trailer, you've kind of seen everything. And yeah, for me, it was quite a bit of a letdown. Especially like Anna Kendrick isn't amazing yet, but she was really good in Up in the Air, and she had a few good roles. And yeah, I don't know what the hell Brittany Snow's doing, but anyway.
Yeah, I didn't give it the benefit of any doubt, really. I'm a big fan actually of those sorts of a cappella cover versions. I do like them. I've got a little collection of them.
Will
at
you
home.
Be getting the soundtrack?
No, I won't be, because it's not real. It's not like those, the real student sort of a cappella groups. I've got quite a few tracks by a group called the Brown Derbies from Brown University, and including a fantastic version of a Radiohead song. You know, it's like
tell me that's what we're going out on the show with today.
That no, we're not actually. Oh, no, I know because we've moved on from that. But anyway, I love that stuff. I love cool cover versions, and I love a cappella, and often these groups can really sing, you know, their arrangements are really good fun, and so the singing bits were the bits that I sort of got into. I quite like those, but they are few and far between. The arrangements aren't startlingly innovative, and then there's long periods of, I mean, it's basically just a high school sports movie. It's like Step Up or
I thought it was a lot like Bring It On, that cheerleader
right
movie.
Right, and
maybe more like Bring It On too.
There was another one called Stomp the Yard, which was which was about college kids. A similar thing, going to the championship, but they have this particular kind of stompy dancing, which I'd never heard of before. And
made popular by the group Stomp.
Yeah, well,
in the '90s,
right? But this is, but also particularly Afro-American sort of thing. So kind of interesting, I suppose. But this is basically the same film, only with jokes instead of romance. Precious Little Romance, actually, which that was a bit weird. What do you think of Rebel Wilson? Are you a fan? Because she's getting lots and lots of bigger and bigger roles, and she's being asked to basically save films now. Like, that's the impression that I got from this, was that there was probably a lot less of her in the script than there was after they'd shot, and it was just like, oh, we're gonna have to keep putting her in.
I feel like she's kind. I think she's really funny, but she's not getting the role she needs to really kind of come out in that role. Like, What to Expect When You're Expecting, her character was kind of like, it wasn't very good. And that same character, they seem to kind of be like drawing it out and repeating it. And it's kind of like she's getting the Rafe Spall treatment. Like, Rafe Spall was awesome in Hot Fuzz, and he's a really funny guy, and he's like a great comedic actor, but he's just getting these like roles, and he's kind of moping around and is sometimes in there for comic relief, but it's not very good. So I don't know. I think she has a lot of potential.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope somebody gives her a role that allows her to stretch out a little bit, because yeah, at the moment the cliches just are really sad. You know, it's a bit pathetic.
It's been typecast.
Typecasting. That's exactly what it is. But you know, interestingly, because I did a little bit of research just to find out a bit more about who she is and where she's from, and she's done quite a lot of television in Australia, which is where she sort of grew to fame. So I was wondering whether, you know, Rebel's her real name, right? And it is her real name. Do you know her younger brother is called Riot?
Oh, those Australians
with a
their
Y.
Sunstroke.
Riot with a Y.
I think that might be the middle name of my future child.
So,
write that one down.
Pitch Perfect. I thought it was rubbish, and also I thought it was kind of offensive in terms of the fact that all the further away the characters got from being the sort of white straight examples of sort of normalcy, the weirder and more offensive they got. And so it was like all of the characters of color are just really weird and made fun of all the way through, the Asians, the, you know, it's like, it was just actually bigoted, frankly.
That's what I think a lot of American teen movies, that it's like, that's like the trend right now.
Yeah, and it's a really ugly trend.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I don't know who's sort of keeping an eye on this and going, you know, actually this is really obviously bigoted. Please, can you just pull it in?
Yeah, but have you watched YouTube recently? It's pretty bad. It's pretty racist and awful and bigoted.
Don't depress me. Don't depress me any more than I
know. Anyway, okay. So my two words for Pitch Perfect are off pitch. Let's talk about something better.
Okay. My two words for Pitch Perfect are pitch imperfect.
Oh, God, pretty, snap.
Yeah, but that's only because Janky Beth got the really good two words. So.
Right.
Next week we're going to have to get in first, aren't we? We've just got to make sure our listeners don't beat us to the good two-word reviews.
All right, let's cheer everyone up with some news. Yeah. Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, is the silver axe-wielding president of the U.S., has received...
Wasn't he some kind of vampire killer? I seem to remember that from my yeah, cinema history lessons.
Yeah, Steven Spielberg has remade the film, and yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis is starring. Has received mixed responses. I think we all know what that means. After a special preview screening at the New York Film Festival.
It's actually better than that. I have read some of them, and it's generally pretty positive, I have to say.
The screening was a work in progress, which the New York Film Festival seems to be quite famous for. Having this films in progress screens.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this in a moment. Let's just finish this item and I'll just I'll amplify.
Yes, but it's unclear how much is likely to change before the official premieres, the closing night gala at the American Film Institute Festival in LA on November the 8th, before a limited release in the US on the following day.
The AFI, who announced that it was their closing night gala a few weeks ago, and it was like, yeah, fantastic, this is a really big, this is a massive coup, and they'll be so pissed off that their thunder has been stolen by the New York Film Festival, even though it's supposedly a work in progress, even though supposedly it was a secret, even though, you know, it's like people knew for a week that it was coming. It's really bad form, and yet it's constant. And I know that from what I understand is that the New York Film Festival is extremely pissed off at festivals like Telluride doing exactly the same thing to them. You know, Telluride in previous years has had what they call sneaks or secret screenings or works in progress screenings in order to get films to play before New York or before London or before Toronto, and so steal their thunder. And I know that this year Telluride was a little bit thinner on the ground because of the pressure that was put on. And it's, you know, kind of hypocritical for the New York Film Festival to put so much pressure on distributors to not allow these sneaks and then to take advantage of one like this, you know. And I wonder how much a director or a distributor gains from screening a film to such a critical audience when it may not be 100% finished.
Hmm.
You know, it just seems like there's more risk than there is reward.
Hmm.
This is where Sai would be able to jump in and tell us what he thinks. Maybe next week.
Yeah. Moving on. US cinema chain Cinemark has announced a cool new initiative for our differently abled audiences. Audio descriptions of scenes for the blind and visually impaired. Also, I believe called descriptive video because you can get it for television.
Uh-huh.
The new system will audibly describe a scene's environment and settings, actors' facial expressions and costumes where there would otherwise be a pause in the dialogue. I actually kind of want to go to the cinema and just listen.
Well,
have things explained to me.
Well, I have to say that there is the for anybody who's interested in this and doesn't want to wait for the technology, just go to your local neighborhood theater on a Sunday morning and and sit next to our senior citizens, and
especially if there's two females together.
Exactly, they will explain it all to you. So
a flock.
So there you go. It's you know, we you don't need the technology.
And they'll probably even, if it's filmed locally while you're watching it, you'll probably find out who lives in the houses in the background, as I did when I watched Juno at the theater in Vancouver. Oh, gosh. Because we haven't had any Ryan Gosling news for a while, we're forced to run pure speculation from Slash Film today. Drive director Nicholas Winding Refn has been quoted in London's Evening Standard as saying there won't be a sequel to Drive, but the character may still appear in another film. I thought he said that ages ago somewhere else.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah. So are we even recycling speculation?
Yeah.
It was in today's Slash Film, so don't blame me.
Film festival news, though. Vancouver Film Festival is on right now, and A Royal Affair is flying.
I know. Lame.
Psh. Lame. Also, the Abu Dhabi Film Festival is about to kick off,
And London starts next Wednesday.
Yes, we have the program. It's somewhere.
Yes, you have the program because I brought it back from London for you. I wouldn't mind it actually back at some point.
Yes, I know. I was going to get back today, but it's buried under the pile of things.
And what I was perhaps hoping, just off the top of my head, thinking that friend of Cinematica, Kelly Dare, who is working on the London Film Festival at the moment, we might try and get her on the show. Maybe not next Wednesday because it is the opening day and I suspect she'll be busy. Yes. But at some point we should talk to her and find out what that festival's like, really.
Yeah. My man friend is working at the Abu Dhabi Film Festival again this year. So I was drilling him for information about the celebrities because the first year he went, they had this humongous like list of A-list celebrities because, of course, it's Abu Dhabi. They have lots of money. They pay for these celebrities to come over. Even if they're in a film or not, just to walk the red carpet. And this year, I think it's just Richard Gere. And there's some Bollywood, big Bollywood actors and directors. But the only American A-list, I guess if you can call him A-list celebrity, is Richard Gere this year because Arbitrage will be screening.
Right. And I just saw a little piece of news that he's obviously doing the festival or the B-list festival circuit because he got a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Hamptons International Film Festival. So, you know,
that sounds like a terrible film festival to go to.
I don't know.
It's all people in khakis and like sweater sets.
With their sweaters wrapped around their shoulders.
But nightmares about that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a festival for the 1%. That one, but Arbitrage opens here quite soon, doesn't it? And so it definitely is getting a massive push, and he's working it because I think that there's a real sense that he's up for Academy Award consideration. So he is working it.
Yes, November 1st is when Arbitrage will open. So mm-hmm. Look forward to it then.
All right, let's talk Dread.
Peachtree's is the manufacturing base for all the slow mo in Mega City 1.
You know how often we get a judge up in Peachtree's.
Well, you got one now.
She has control of everything. Levels 1 to 200.
This is Mama. Somewhere in this block are two judges.
That's not good.
I want him dead.
We're gonna have to go through him. Rookie, you ready?
Yeah.
You look ready.
All right. Dread.
Definitely the film of the week.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
Yeah. Yep, don't disagree with that. I saw this. I saw this in a little multiplex in Devon where my family are from. This is while I was overseas, and there were two films out of the 10 screens that either I hadn't seen already or needed to see for the show. One of which was Anna Karenina, and one of which was Dread. And my aunt, who I was staying with. I gave her the choice, thinking that she would go, oh, Dread, violent, 3D, probably not. And then she said, oh, I can't stand Keira Knightley. So we went to watch Dread, first time she'd ever watched a 3D film. It was R18. It's incredibly violent. It really does earn that R18 certificate. And so I sat there quite uncomfortably, must admit, all the way through thinking, this wasn't the right choice. Having said that, if I hadn't have been sort of chaperoning my aunt at the time, I would have really enjoyed it. If it had just been me, I would have got a big kick out of it because I think that it's energetic, it's pacey, it's got energy. It doesn't muck about getting in with a whole lot of backstory. You know, it's not an origin story, which so many of these sort of superhero comic book things are, where you get to see what the person was like before they became who they were. This is just you just trust that Dread is who Dread is, and the scenario is set up, and then you get into it. And I know that it's not connected. It's not a rip-off of The Raid in any way because it was actually made slightly before The Raid was made, but it's very similar in that it's a tower block and they've got to get to the top and they've got to go through waves and waves and waves of the opposition before they can get to the very top to get to the woman gang leader who basically controls this tower block and controls the drugs that are being sort of fed out into the community. And Mega City 1, of course, is basically unpoliceable, ungovernable. So it makes you wonder why they bother, really, and why they apply. Can I be a policeman, please? but sure enough, we've got Dredd. And this is Carl Urban, his chin, basically, isn't it? Because he never takes the helmet off.
Well, it's his frown as well. I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, man, how do you get the role of Dredd? Like, obviously you have to fit the costume. You got to be buff. Mm. But I think Carl Urban really won it because he has the longest frown.
Yeah.
It's like...
It's pretty, he can do quite a lot, he does quite a lot of work with it, you know, it's not like it's unemotional or completely, you know, there's some subtleties going on in there, but he can't work with his eyes, he can't work with, you know, so it's tricky stuff. I found myself thinking that I wished his voice was rougher.
Me too.
Yeah, I just wanted more, because you know who the character is really sort of based on, the character, the original comic book character from the early 80s. I think was designed to have been played by Clint Eastwood around 1974-5, that Dirty Harry Clint Eastwood. And so I sort of, if I could hear the inflections of Clint Eastwood, but not the actual grit, not the feeling that there was like that he'd been sort of eating sand for the last sort of 20 years. So
I think he said, there's one part where he said like one line and it was a great zinger and he had kind of had a gravelly voice.
Right. Yeah, but not quite enough. Another interesting fact about Dredd is that it was made in South Africa, and so that's it's an example, I think, of the South African film industry really kicking on after District 9, which, you know, it didn't have. It's a bit like Wellington, you know. It's like until one film gets made, you don't really have the infrastructure to be able to do that stuff. What they do have, of course, in South Africa is a lot of extras to throw off buildings. So, you know, there's... It throws a lot of bodies at the at stuff. It's very entertaining, isn't it? You know, it's a good tight story, and it does a really good job of just sowing some seeds about both of the central characters, so that you don't feel like you've been told everything, right? Mm. So when the second one comes along, which I think it's been successful enough now that the second one will come along. There's still somewhere to go, you know, with these characters, and you can find out a little bit about how they got to where they are, and you know, there's a whole Mega City One to investigate, and a whole lots of sort of drama and action. So I hope it isn't like Ghost Rider, where it takes so long for them to come back with a sequel that they end up just it's just starting again. But I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with it, and I hope that Mr. Urban gets even more confident in the role, because physically he certainly got it. You know, he's I don't know how big those heels are that he's walking around on, but he certainly looks...
He's beefy.
He's huge, isn't he? So, yeah, and, you know, this is not a film for everybody, obviously. It is R18. It's the 3D is really good, as Miriam mentioned in her tweet earlier on.
And I think, for me, the 3D sequences, like, if there's ever a film to glorify drug use, this is going to be in the top 10.
Yeah, it does make it seem a lot, you know, pretty, you know.
Pretty awesome.
Like, yeah.
But, those 3D sequences because there's this drug going around called slow-mo, and it slows everything down, so you get these, like, hyper-color, super-saturated, sparkly, magical, like, fairy moments where people are just floating through space and there's like things coming at you and it's sparkly and it's just so like incredible, like it's so beautiful.
It is beautiful, and I'll tell you who has to take a lot of credit for that. The cinematographer is Anthony Dodd Mantle, who, if you saw the Keanu Reeves documentary Side by Side about the film to digital transition, he appeared quite a lot in that, and as one definitely one of the most inventive and resourceful and imaginative cinematographers around. He did 28 Days Later, for example, and was the first sort of, you know, to use handycams all the way throughout, and is a real pioneer of digital cinematography, and just whoever made that choice, really good choice. Also, interestingly, the film written by Alex Garland, who wrote 28 Days Later and wrote the novel The Beach that the film, the Leonardo DiCaprio film, was based on. So this is a film that's it's not a disposable piece of sort of hack work, is it?
No. You know,
some people really, involved have really taken it seriously.
It's really meaty and it's really it's pulpy. It has that kind of dirty
glutinous.
Yes, like sticky, really good kind of Sin City sort of feel. Not quite as slick as Sin City, but I think it, you know, it would go very nicely in a box set.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
well, that's very fantastic. Non-Marvel comic book to film conversions that were quite successful. So. Yeah.
Fantastic. Do you have two words for us for Dread?
My Dread two words reviews is Dreadly Raid.
I'm going to kill you now because after watching the Sapphires this weekend, I decided that I really like that word, deadly. And so my review of Dread was Dreadly. Gosh darn it. I'm not going to go.
Just Dreadly.
Just one word, Dreadly.
Okay.
Yeah. So because I invented the rule so I can I can break
there you
it
go,
if
that's
I
two,
want.
That's two Dreadlies. That's like.
That's not bad. Dreadly squared.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, if you think you're in the target market for it, then run, don't walk, basically.
And go with
you
friends. I went by myself, and I was wishing I was the opposite of you. I was wishing I was there with someone else. I was like, oh, I felt a bit lonely watching Dread at 9 o'clock at night.
I could introduce you to my aunt.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'll come to Anna Karenina when it comes out. But I tell you what, she missed out big time because Anna Karenina is great. Okay, we've got one more to go before we wrap up the show.
To many of us South Africans, he was the soundtrack to our lives.
Everybody I knew had his records.
The message it had was be anti-establishment. Really, the first opposition to apartheid, they'll tell you that they were influenced by Rodriguez.
But nobody knew anything about him. He was a mystery.
Then we found out that he had committed suicide.
And a lot of people have different versions of the story.
He set himself alight on stage.
He reached down and pulled up a gun. I thought it'd make a good story. Find out how Rodriguez died.
So there we are, searching for Sugar Man. This was the preview.
The program launch.
It was the program launch. That's the word. That's the word I'm looking for. The program launch for the New Zealand International Film Festival this year. So that's a few months ago. How has it held up in your estimation?
Pretty good. I feel that this documentary has the potential to be the Bill Cunningham of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like that little film.
And for those uninitiated, that means the film that goes on
and plays
and the word of mouth is just fantastic about it. Yep.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. The trailer basically gives you the synopsis. It's about Sixto Rodriguez, who was a musician in the 60s. He was quite cutting edge. Like he had some great songs, but never really made it big or made it at all in the States. But his records became kind of the anthem for South African uprising. So he became very, very popular in South Africa, completely unbeknownst to him. Disappeared. No one knew what happened. There's all these stories about onstage suicide. And so these
bizarre rumors.
Yeah. And there's so many of them. And these, without giving anything away, because that would suck.
Well, I don't know. Can I ask you about that? We'll come to that in a second.
Yes. Yeah. these two big fans who I believe they work in a record store together, or they work for a...
Oh, one of them owned a record store and was just a besotted fan of this one album, really, Cold Facts.
Cold Facts, I think. Yeah.
Was doing some investigation. And then there was also a rock journalist who was at the same time. But they were both investigating at the same time, and then they met and realized that the paths were crossing. Yeah.
Yes. And so it's their journey to find out the truth of what happened. And I don't want to give anything away of what happened because I was forcing myself to suspend disbelief to make it more exciting.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. And I'll say, yes, if you're going to go without doing any research online or anything like that. Like, don't be tempted to follow any of the promotional links or whatever, because it really is better. It's a much more satisfying film. The less you know.
Yeah.
The less you know. Having said that, the more you know, the more you realize that there's been a few games played by the documentary filmmakers here in order to build up the tension and to it's actually a fantastic example of documentary storytelling in the way that tension can be created out of almost nothing. just because of just to do with how you parcel out information and how you
and the music in the background when you're parceling out that information.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And and does make the music sound a lot more interesting than it is. I remember thinking, because they were playing the soundtrack a lot during the film festival here in Wellington, and I remember thinking, it's kind of interesting. I wonder what that is. And then I actually Shazammed it and went, oh, right, of course, it's Rodriguez because, yeah. But he sounds a little bit, it's like a not quite as amazing James Taylor, you know.
Mm.
But it's only the story layered over the top that makes the music as more interesting than it actually is. But it's, I think it's actually more interesting looking back on it in terms of the portrait of a culture in South Africa closed off from the world, getting information in tiny little bits and a lot of it not accurate, able to, some mysterious people able to sell millions of records in South Africa without ever reporting back to the rest of the world about what they...
Most of them are bootlegs as well.
Yeah, that's right. So. But exactly, bootlegs or just simply not reporting or not sending the money back. And so that... in some ways, I wonder whether there's a another film to be made about South Africa as this isolated
vacuum.
Yeah, exactly.
cultural vacuum.
Exactly, because the story, there would be no story if it wasn't for the fact that South Africa was the people of South Africa found it so difficult to get any information out while they were the pariahs of the world. So that's on that level, I found it really interesting. And I think that, I can't say the next thing because that does give stuff away. Okay, no, I won't go there. I will say that, again, this is one of those films that if you go, don't find out too much about it. Let it happen to you, and then get back to us with your feedback on it, because we'd like to chat more with people who've actually seen it. Searching for Sugar Man, it's opening pretty wide, I think. On Thursday, and it probably will be this year's big documentary, I'd say. The word of mouth will have to be really strong on it. But again, I feel like it cheats a wee bit, to be honest.
Yes, and if you are a person like, not to try and do like a plug, but I definitely suggest the albums. And if you're on Spotify, his music is on Spotify, so you can listen to it that way.
Right, and in fact, if you carry on listening to the show as we wind up the show, you will hear the actual track "Sugar Man" as we're playing out. So you will get a sense of what Rodriguez was like in 1970, and maybe a sense of how the people of South Africa, the whites of South Africa in particular, because it's really not very black music, is it? It's very very folky. The whites of South Africa would have responded to it. Two words for us before we wrap up.
My two words for Searching for Sugar Man are sweet ducko.
Mm-hmm. My two are slightly cheaty. And that is our show for this week. Simon will be back next week, I'm sure. We'll insist upon it, actually. Next week, Liam Neeson is back to kick more bad guy butt in Taken 2. We preview the foreign language Oscar frontrunner, what is it called? The Intouchables? The Untouchables?
The Intouchables. That's Franglish. Intouchables is a French word, but they haven't translated it. But depending what country you're going to watch it in, it'll probably have a different title. So in New Zealand, it's called The Intouchables.
Yeah, because in the UK, it was Untouchables. They just translated the whole thing. Maybe nobody goes to anything with a French title in Britain. Bradley Cooper is an author with a Jeremy Irons problem in the words. That's next week. And 76-year-old Ken Loach is back with comedy drama The Angels Share. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't.
Ah, right. I got sent a screener by the distributor this week for it, which is very kind of them. But on the letter, they were at pains to point out that the screener has subtitles, but the film doesn't. As if somehow I'm quite keen to see it now, to see what they mean.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, so that's The Angels Share. That's next week as well. All that and more in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget, if you click subscribe in iTunes or your own favourite podcasting software, it means that the episodes are all downloaded automatically overnight, so you can listen over your cornflakes in the morning. Leave us feedback at the iTunes store, because ratings and reviews, that helps get the word out to people. And you can contact us through various virtual and non-virtual means.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle @CinematicaCast. on Facebook at facebook.com/cinematicapodcast and on our website at www.cinematica.co.nz, or you can put a message in a bottle and see if it floats to Petone. And
Look, if we get one of those, boy, are you getting a prize. I would say that is a guaranteed prize of some description. And happy birthday to us, by the way. Yes, the show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're leaving you with more music. As I said earlier, this is the soundtrack to Searching for Sugar Man. The track is called Sugar Man from Rodriguez's 1970 debut album Cold Fact. Until next week, that's all from me.
And all from me.
Sugar Man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams? Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar Man met a false friend on a lonely, dusty road. Lost my heart when I found it. It had turned to dead black coal. Silver magic ships you carry.